You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C. Just barely. Folks, I want to tell you, you know, I've been talking about the weather here in D.C. It is just something. We have had now two solid days of cold, ugly rain, and tonight about 7:30, 8 o'clock, it turned into, oh, I don't know, icy rain. The streets are miserable. And, of course, you know, of all days, I had to be outside today. I had to go down to the office of the American Free Press. I had to go downtown to do some shopping. And somehow or another, I made it back up here to Capitol Hill. And I'm glad I did because we have a very special guest tonight. Very special, as I say, in the sense that I said we had a very special guest last night, Mark Dankoff, who also broadcasts here, but we have here again with us tonight, not Mark Dankoff, but Mark Glenn. Mark has been a guest on this program many times, and I gather from the listeners that you appreciate that, because I always get a lot of good response when Mark is on the program, because, well, first of all, because Mark's a very personable guy. Number two, because Mark's a very smart guy. He has a lot of interesting things to say, and he says it in a very articulate fashion. And tonight he's going to answer a riddle. We had a caller here the other night who raised a question. I didn't know if he had an answer for it, but he raised a question, and I thought it was a very interesting question. Why is it that we always hear about the state of Israel, but we don't hear about the state of Ireland or the state of Indonesia or the state of Iceland? We're going to answer that question tonight with our special guest, Mark Glenn. Stay tuned, folks. gentlemen, welcome back. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, courtesy of Headache Stay Gone. You know, it's a wonder I don't have a headache from being out there in the rain all day, but I don't. But if I did, I'll tell you what, I would take Headache Stay Gone. Now, get your pen and paper handy, ladies and gentlemen. I am going to give you the number where you can get Headache Stay Gone, and I'm also going to give you some information about an extraordinary book that I picked up today that relates directly to the topic we are going to be discussing here tonight with our special guest, Mark Glenn. Mark, are you there? Welcome aboard.
Moses Collins Piper. Leading God's chosen people out of Zionist bondage and into the promised land of truth, justice, and the American way.
That's a pretty tall order to come through with tonight, Mark. But, were you listening? Yeah, I guess you were listening the other night because we talked about it afterward. Brian from Pennsylvania raised that question as to why we always hear about the state of Israel. And I chimed in by saying, as I sit here tonight on a program, that's right, we never hear about the state of Iran or the state of Iceland or the state of Indonesia or the state of Ireland. But we do hear about the state of Israel. And people say, oh, you're nitpicking here. You're playing linguistic games. I don't think we are. You and I had traded some comments very briefly the other night before we discussed doing this program. And since then, you've done a little bit of research yourself. And I'd just like to let you loose on that, Mark, and let you tell the audience what you've uncovered.
Okay. First of all, I am by no means an expert on this. Men such as Michael Hoffman or Ted Pike or even probably Tex Mars, I would say they are much better researched on this topic than I am. But it is, interestingly enough, when I heard the caller the other night bring this up, this is a theme that I've been toying with myself, which is it's very prominent. You never hear the country of Israel or the principality of Israel or the nation of Israel. It's always the state of Israel. It's a very prominent thing. And so, as investigators, and we're all investigators, we are trained to look for these little things like this.
That's right.
And so I've had this theory about this for a while, and like I said, it is a theory of mine, but I think that there is plenty of at least circumstantial evidence to support this theory. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind when we're talking about the word Israel is that, this word didn't begin in 1948 when Israel declared itself to be an official political entity. Israel as a name has been around literally for thousands of years, and long before there was ever any land associated with it, the people of the Old Testament, meaning the 12 tribes, they collectively called themselves Israel. And so even in those periods where there was no nation, they still referred to themselves as a nation, and they referred to themselves as Israel. Now, the business of it being a state, okay, state has different connotations to it. We think of it in the very superficial sense as being, some place that has geographical lines drawn around it. But we also have to think that the state also designates an existence of this other, okay, like a state of being. And when you read the writings, particularly the writings of Jewish mystics, a lot of the Orthodox community, they really delve into this a lot. They talk about, being Jewish is a state of being. It's a state of mind. And I think that the reason why Israel is always referred to as a state is because the architects who have been responsible for creating this and for maintaining it, they want to attach a higher, more ethereal significance to it than simply a country that can come and go. I mean, look at all of the countries that have come and gone throughout history, you see. How many states do we know of that have come and gone throughout history? We don't really know of any where they're not discussed. And so I think what they are driving at here is that they're trying to establish a kind of eternal permanence to it by calling it a state. And I just have a few things here that I dug up. I did a little bit of research today, reading through some of my older books and things like that. But, you know, you, like I said, you have to keep in mind that a lot of these people, particularly the Jewish mystics, the Chabad Lubavitch group, and some of the others who are into Kabbalah and things like that, they have an understanding of things that's entirely different than the way that we understand them.
And you know, Mark, I have to interrupt there. That's very, very important to emphasize that fact, because there are so many Christians out there who have this mistaken idea that that Christianity is just kind of a retooled or updated or maybe more genteel form of Judaism.
That's
right.
It's
a branch, more or less, of Judaism, an outgrowth of Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, there is so much of this mystical, Kabbalistic element to Judaism that remains today, that is so contrary to everything Christians hold dear.
Yes, that's true. And the thing is, too, you know, just in case, you know, anyone out there listening is going to assume that, oh, it's just some little sect of guys who like to wear these black coats and black hats and things like that. You even have secular writers such as Yossi Klein Halevi, who's a very well-known writer in Israel, and he refers to a lot of these things when he talks about the Jewish people and how, you know, they have a permanence to them, and they have this unbreakable bond between them and God that only they possess and that no other peoples possess. Okay, but I'd like to read a few sections that I have taken from a few articles that I found in just about 5 minutes of research on the Internet that'll kind of give the listeners an idea of the kind of mindset. And that really is, I think, what we're driving at here. We need to understand the mindset that has created this thing known as Israel and what possible reasons they may have for considering it a state, you see. So anyway, I'd like to – there's an article –
And you know, just for those new listeners who are tuning in, and I hope there are new listeners out there, the importance of this stems from the given fact that Israel as a state, as a political entity, is backed up here in the United States by a very powerful political lobby, alternately known as the Zionist lobby or the Jewish lobby or the pro-Israel lobby. And it is this lobby that played such a major part in getting us into the Iraq war, and they want to get us into the war in Iran. In fact, and just to drive home that point, I just saw a passing reference in the paper today that it was in fact AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, that played a major part in pressuring Congress to they wanted to take out language it would suggest the United States should not launch a military effort against Iran. That was in this bill that just came up before the Senate today. So AIPAC is playing the warmonger role there, and anybody out there who says otherwise to that, Mark, is a liar. So
that's right.
So just for those who don't understand why we're picking on Israel, I just want to emphasize that.
Well, not only that, Mike, one of the things that we have to keep in mind, you know, for the last 4 years or longer, actually since 9/11, we have been treated to a daily, if not a semi-daily or semi-weekly, dose of what Islam is all about, okay? The people responsible for launching us into this war have looked under every rock that they could to try to find some kind of dirt on the Muslims and on their religion that could be used to color the American mind in favor of going to war.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying here is that all things being equal and all, you know, in all fair and love and war, okay, then we have every reason and every right to explore the religious sentiments of the other players who are involved.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Yeah. Right, so... So anyway, I'd like to just read a few things from this article that I picked up off of the Chabad site. It can be found at Chabad.org. And it's one of many articles. And this, like I said, this is an important thing. You need to crawl into the mind of a person if you're going to understand his actions, okay? Now, the name of this article is called What Makes a Jew Jewish? And the writer of this says, throughout our 3,000-year history, we are Jews because God chose us to be his cherished treasure from all the nations, a kingdom of holy people. We are Jews because God chose us to play the central role in the implementation of his purpose in creation and to develop a society and world community that reflects his goodness and perfection. Now, some people would listen to that and say, well, that sounds really good. However, if you were to switch some of the words of that around and maybe say it in a little bit higher voice, you'd be called an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Simply by reiterating what this rabbi has written within the pages of this article here. And he continues and says, the Torah itself proclaims that God dwells amongst the Jews in the midst of their impurities, and that his relationship with his people, the Jews, remains unaffected regardless of their behavior. In the words of the Talmud, a Jew, although he has sinned, is always a Jew. The idea that all souls are the same is one of the biggest mistakes of modern spirituality. Just as oil permeates the olive, the divine soul permeates the Jew. And just as the oil burning in the menorah spreads light, the Jewish soul illuminates the world.
Well, I feel darkness coming over us right now. That's the break coming up, Mark. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. More of Mark Glenn. And we're going to give you some information that you do need about a shocking new book that relates directly to this topic. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Michael Collins, Piper here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, courtesy of Headache Stay Gone, the all-natural cure for headaches. We're here with Mark Glenn, and before we went to the break, Mark was reading a very interesting quotation that he had taken. But what I want to emphasize, Mark, about that quotation is that I have heard variations of that same theme, you know, echoed in writings that have come forth from the Jewish community, the Zionist community, for the last 200 years. This thing that you're, that particular item that you came forth with, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, that's just one writer saying that.
Uh-huh.
But that reflects a mindset that has been continuously found in the literature of this type, and it basically is saying, as I read it, my interpretation of it is that we're a superior group of people.
Mm-hmm.
We are charged with a mission from God.
Mm-hmm.
To rule the world, to make
yeah.
remake the world in our image.
That's right.
You see, that's where the problem comes in. You know, I have, you know, my philosophy, Mark, about religion is that anybody can believe whatever they want, no matter how hellacious, no matter how insane. But when they step beyond a certain path, or I should say when they cross a certain line and start trying to impose their religion upon the rest of the world, whether it's Muslims doing it or Mormons doing it or Catholics doing it or Jews doing it, then the problem comes in. And, you know, I tell you, the funny thing is, Mark, for years and years and years, we were always taught, I certainly was taught this, that we should always respect everybody else's religion. Everybody has the right to believe what they want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last couple years, as you pointed out, to try to bring this thing full circle here, as you pointed out, there has been an amazing emphasis, an amazing approach to the issue of the Islamic faith, the Muslim faith, that has completely veered from that traditional teaching. What, in other words, what I'm saying is it's open season on Islam and Islam alone, and yet Islam is just one of the two key faiths involved in the big conflict we have in the Middle East, between actually the three faiths that are involved in this conflict in the Middle East that threatens to bring the United States into a nuclear conflagration.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of words there to tie together what you said, but I think it's important because there are so many people out there who just, they hear us saying these things about the Jewish religion and about the state of Israel, and they don't quite get what the problem is.
Well, not only that, Mike, just consider, you know, this section of this article that I've just written. Imagine if the person who had written it, instead of his name being Rabbi Eliezer, whatever, what if it was Sheikh something something Muhammad, and replaced the word Jew with Muslim?
Exactly.
Would be plastered across every pro-war, pro-Israel internet site in the world, and it would be used as one more piece of prima facie evidence to show, see, look what these Muslims are up to, they want to take over the world. But when you present something right out of the horse's mouth, something, and by the way, something that has been with mankind for thousands of years. You know, we haven't had, there's no such thing as the Muslim problem. There's no such thing as the Christian problem, the Buddhist problem, the Hindu problem, but there is this thing known as the Jewish problem.
That's true enough.
Yeah, that has popped up like a virus.
And I would throw in here again as a caution to those out there who were squirming when they hear this. The last several times that I have seen the term the Jewish problem referred to, it has not been in the writings of Adolf Hitler or the writings of Sheikh Ali Baba or the writings of even yours truly, Michael Collins Piper. The writings, the terminology, the phraseology, the Jewish problem, more often than not, is referred to in the writings of Jewish philosophers and Jewish historians. So, mm-hmm. So this is not, again, this is not some anti-Semitic screed. This is something that is found, for those who care to look, this is found in literature by Jews, often written for Jews.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess bringing this back full circle to the topic that began the conversation, you know, the state of Israel, we have to understand that it means something different to these people than it does to us. They may say, oh, we just want to have a little place that we can call our own, where we don't have to worry about being picked on and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there may be some people, some of the smaller players who really do believe that. But in terms of those who hold the positions of power where important decisions are made, it means something entirely different to them. You see, the idea of the state of Israel.
Can you believe it, Mark? We have a break. We have a break already. We are gonna get through this one way or the other. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Collins Piper and Mark Glenn here. We're going to a break. When we come back, a little bit more, and we will try to squeeze in a phone call or two. Stay tuned, folks.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Michael Collins Piper here, coming to you from Washington, courtesy of Headache Stay Gone. You can reach them on the internet at headachestaygone.com or call 1-800-327-0727. Here with Mark Glenn, talking about the little-known philosophy behind what we know as the State of Israel and what it really represents. Mark, you were making a very significant and relevant point there about the concept of the State of Israel, which incidentally in its constitution says that the borders of the State of Israel are universal, so that certainly ties into what you're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for years we have been taught and told that we need to beware of any kind of messianic-minded fanatical groups of people who want to take over the world and implement their vision as to how things are supposed to be. And yet, that is exactly what we're dealing with here when we deal with the existing power structure and the agenda that they want to carry out. Now, you know, people can you know, scream all they want, oh, it's the Jesuits, it's the Vatican, it's this group and that group. But, you know, the thread that runs through all of these moving parts of this machinery, the one thread that runs through all of it is the Jewish agenda. Okay, now there will be people who will scream and say, well, no, there's a difference between the Jews and the Zionists. Well, no, I'm sorry. They're as dissimilar to each other as cigars and cigarettes, as far as I'm concerned. They're birds of a feather. They may seem to argue at times, but in the end, they both have a vision for the world, that the world should be a certain way, and they use their influence to bring this about. And so, as we consider this little sliver of land along the eastern shores of the Mediterranean Sea, we have to keep in mind that the people who are in these decision-making positions, they have a different idea as to what these words mean than we do. Okay. And another thing that I would like to say.
That's a good point. That's a very important point to make, that the public definition of a word or the public's perception of the word isn't always quite exactly what the Zionists perceive that word to mean.
And one thing that I would like to say, particularly to my Christian friends, who see all of this taking place now as a harbinger that Jesus is coming back soon, and you know, we have to give these Jews this land because God promised it to them. Well, if God promised it to them, then why was it that the only way they were able to take it was through a protracted, prolonged application of violence and warfare against innocent people for almost a century? Okay? If God wanted them to have that land, he would have given it to them.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny, Mark. I just saw a news report in a Jewish newspaper the other day about complaining about how terrible it was that so many Jews had to flee Iraq back in, I think, the 1940s. What they don't mention is the fact that there is or was an International Association of Jews from Arabic countries that was very, very critical of the State of Israel because of the fact that it was known that the Israelis had actually gone into some of those Arab countries and created situations that forced many of those Jews to leave. In other words, they set off bombs in Jewish communities. Mm-hmm. This is the Israelis. This is the Zionists committed these crimes.
Yeah, and then
to force the Jews out of the Arab countries to get them to move to Israel.
That's exactly right. I'm reading a book right now by Robert Friedman, an older book. It's called Zealots of Zion. It deals with the violent West Bank settlers, and he has quotes in there from some of these settlers that he interviewed, where they said, you know, that they would dress up as Arabs and they would go and firebomb homes and cars and even schools of their fellow Jews, just so that they could blame it on the Arabs and raise the anti-Arab hysteria. So they have established this as a pattern, time and again. Nobody should be shocked to hear about this. In fact, the one Iraqi Jewish writer who told his own tale, I think his name is Naum Gilati.
Naum Gilati. I've met that gentleman. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fascinating. A tale that he has to tell about how the synagogues in Iraq were blown up by the Zionists in order to drive the Jews of Iraq into Israel.
That's right. I actually shared a cab with him in Washington here one time, along with Chuck Fishbein, a former Zionist fundraising official who turned against Israel like many good Jews have done. But in any case, what it all comes down to then are these definitions, and what we find here is that this concept of the State of Israel, the state refers to that physical, geographic, nationalist entity, but the word Israel has a much bigger meaning in the world of power politics.
Yes. To them, it is the Messiah. If you read the writings of a lot of these Jewish mystics, you know, they say that God, he cannot show himself to mortal man as he is, because mortal man is incapable of grasping him. So what he did in order to manifest himself and to show himself to mankind is that he created the Jewish people. Now, I'm not making this up. These are the writings.
That's exactly right. The concept is that the Jewish people were God, and God is the Jewish people, and the state is just a physical manifestation of God's grace, so to speak.
And is it not interesting, particularly in these apocalyptically minded Christians who are waiting for the end times, that the Bible talks about the end times, and it talks about this Antichrist, although they don't give him a name, but they say that he places himself in the holy place and sets an altar up of himself and forces all people to bow down and worship him. Now, does that or does that not sound like the situation that we are dealing with today with regards to the Jews and their agenda? If you do not bow down before them, you are shut down.
I think that pretty much, encapsulates the whole situation as it really comes down to. Like I've said on this program in this country today, the worst thing you can be called is not a child molester or a rapist. The worst thing you can be called is an anti-Semite. And that really says a lot about the situation in society today. Now, it's funny, Mark, I've mentioned this on this program, and I probably mentioned it to you in private discussion. I've told the story of how a Jewish friend of mine, I've known this gentleman for years. One day we were having a candid discussion about Judaism, and I said to him, how would you describe Judaism in just a couple words? And he said, self-worship.
Mm-hmm.
And based upon my reading of things in the context of my reading about Israel and the Middle East and all these interrelated topics, I said to him, fair enough. I said, that's my perception. Now, this is someone who has been deeply trained in Jewish thinking, raised in an entirely Jewish household, and has made the, pilgrimage to Israel once or twice. So this is someone who is very much in tune to that way of thinking. And this is all the relevance of all this has to do with the fact that we have in power in the United States today many, many politicians who are in the thrall of this Jewish lobby, and this Jewish lobby is guided by this very philosophy that we're talking about. That's where it all comes together, see, Mark. People think we're here ragging on the Jewish religion and suggesting that people shouldn't be allowed to practice their faith. I'm not here saying anybody shouldn't be allowed to practice their faith. I mean, no matter how much of a gutter religion it is, as Louis Farrakhan once said, I think people are free to practice whatever they want to, people are free to practice it. But when they start getting my country involved in wars to advance their religious and political agenda, that's where I have to say we've got to draw the line. And I think I speak for both of us when I say that.
How many times do we hear in a day them screeching out the line separation of church and state over anything? I mean, I don't care what it is. Anything. But at the same time, our country, the entire political and military and economic apparatus of this country has been merged with this religious ideology known as Judaism. And now it is the perfect union of not just church and state, but synagogue and state.
That's exactly right. And you know, the thing about it is, as so many of our listeners are aware, and as I cannot help but be reminded every day when I walk into my office and see the file cabinets full of news clippings from mainstream publications, the phenomenon has been longstanding, but it's only getting worse. And the very fact we had the Iraq War, and now we're pending on a venture into Iran, just illustrates how bad the situation has become.
Well, the worst part of the situation is that the people who should have known better and who should know better now, who should see the signs of the times, meaning the Christians of this country, they're completely turned the opposite way. The call has gone out for all the men to assemble in the square with their arms and ready to fight, and these guys are all laying around passed out drunk.
Mark, I'm sorry to say you're right.
John Hagee and all of these other guys, they have totally lulled the Christians in this country to sleep. And I mean, it's, you go to the supermarket, Mike, and you listen to the conversations taking place. Nobody's talking about, they're talking about Britney Spears shaving her head. We're in the middle of one disaster and we're about to get ourselves enmeshed in an even bigger disaster, and nobody's talking about it.
Well, you know, in regard to this concept of religion and how we always hear about Islam, I hold in my hand a book, just came out, I picked it up today, published by the Princeton University Press. Now, for those of you who've never heard of Princeton University Press, it's associated with a university known as Princeton, which is not generally considered to be a neo-Nazi outpost. The author of this book is Peter Schaefer. He's the professor of Judaic Studies and director of the program in Judaic Studies at Princeton University. And this program is funded by Ronald O. Perelman, major Zionist industrialist here in the United States, who is very well known as a supporter of Israel and as a supporter of Jewish charities. Well, this professor, Peter Schaefer, has written a book, Jesus in the Talmud. This book is from Princeton University Press. And it says this, Mark. Peter Schaefer examines how the rabbis of the Talmud read, understood, and used the New Testament Jesus narrative to assert, ultimately, Judaism's superiority over Christianity. The Talmudic stories make fun of Jesus' birth from a virgin, fervently contest his claim to be the Messiah and Son of God, and maintain that he was rightfully executed as a blasphemer and idolater. They subvert the Christian idea of Jesus' resurrection and insist he got the punishment he deserved in hell, and that a similar fate awaits his followers. Mm-hmm. Schaefer contends that these Talmudic stories betray a remarkably high level of familiarity with the Gospels and represent a deliberate and sophisticated anti-Christian polemic that parodies the New Testament narratives. In other words, this professor of Judaic Studies at Princeton University has finally confirmed with so-called Nazi apologists and so-called anti-Semites and so-called bigots have been saying for 1,000 years almost, not 1,000 years, 500 years, that the Jewish faith is virulently anti-Christian, hateful towards Jesus Christ, and condemns him in the foulest and most vile fashion possible. This is from Princeton University Press. The author's name is Peter Schaefer, S-C-H-A-F-E-R, and it's entitled Jesus in the Talmud. It's a remarkable book, Mark, and it just confirms, you know, we talked about this topic on the program several weeks ago. I remember commenting at the time that I remember being so shocked that one Darrell Bradford Smith referred to Judaism as one of the great religions, and that he said it had been hijacked by Zionism. But, you know, I tell you what, long before there was Zionism and long before there was the State of Israel, there was something called the Talmud. And as I always say, who put the mud in the Talmud? Because These horrible, horrible things about Jesus Christ that are preached in the Talmud and which are outlined by this professor of Judaic Studies are things that most American Christians who worship at the altar of Israel, and when I say Israel, I mean Israel in the universal sense and in the political sense, those two divisions that we've divined and defined here tonight, these Christians who worship at the altar of Israel and Israel, so to speak, they have no concept of how really vile the Talmud is. And you know what's interesting, Mark? What's interesting, Mark, it ties in directly with your opening remarks, like the quote that you read to us. The fact is, as he points out in the book, that the Talmud is a defining document of those who refuse to accept the new covenant that Jesus Christ brought. The defining document. And that Talmud, that defining document, is the document that guides the philosophy of Zionism today. It guides this thing called Israel.
Mm-hmm. I have said to my fellow Christians, if they want to know who this Antichrist, this beast with seven heads and ten horns and all the rest of that stuff is, you know, that was predicted in the book of the Apocalypse, if you want to know what the Antichrist is, all you need to do is sit down and read some of the passages of the Jewish Talmud. Right there is your blueprint for instituting a society that is completely anti-God, anti-human, anti-everything that Jesus preached and gave his life for. And it shouldn't be any surprise. And you know, the thing is, Mike, even before the Talmud was written, we had the words of the Gospels themselves. Jesus made it very clear that the people who opposed him, you know, they weren't just some bad-tempered rascals. He characterized them as children of the devil. And he made it clear as well that there was nothing good to be found in Judaism anymore, if there ever was. When he cursed the tree, he said, "You will never produce anything good." He was telling his followers that the tree that they were going to get the sustaining, life-sustaining fruit was dead. There was nothing to get off of it anymore.
Mark, this is pretty powerful stuff. We have a lot of callers, at least one caller anyway, I should say, lined up. When we come back, we'll bring him up and wrap up the hour here. I think people have learned maybe more than they wanted to learn tonight, Mark. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Collins Piper here. We're going to go to the phones right after this final break. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Michael Collins Piper. We're wrapping up this hour. Just to let you know, Tex Mars is going to be here tonight, Tuesday night. This coming Tuesday, Tex Mars, Power of Prophecy. He's going to be talking about a new book called The Synagogue of Satan. Mark Glenn, if you're available, I'd like to have you come back on Monday night, because I think we can segue right into you know, continuation of this discussion and set the stage for a segue into the program with Tex Mars on Tuesday night. So if you're available, Mark, I'd love to have you back Monday night.
As the genie said to Aladdin, your wish is my command.
All right. Well, speaking of genie, we got Gene in Texas. We're going to bring up Gene for the last couple minutes here and see what Gene has to say.
Yeah, my name's not Genie, but anyway.
That's right.
You know, Arthur Kessler wrote a book in around 1980. He's a famous Jewish historian, a nominal Jewish historian and author. He and his wife were found murdered in their London apartment in around 1982, I think, for writing this book called The 13th Tribe, where he said that 90% of his own people were not Israelites. And these are the people that run the state of Israeli today. These are the people that run the American government and media, as you all know. They're not Israelites at all. They're the people, they are the synagogue of Satan. The Greek word for synagogue actually means an assembly of people. And so these are the people of Satan, the devil, literally. They're from Cain, and that's the truth that got Christ Jesus murdered right there. But anyway, I'm going to quote right quick from the American Heritage College Dictionary on the definition of state. It's one of the definitions, quote, one of the more or less internally autonomous territorial and political units comprising a federation under a sovereign government of or pertaining to a body politic or to an internally autonomous territorial or political unit compromising a federation owned and operated by a state. Well, that's why the Israelites call a state. They are an adopted state of the United States. They own and operate the United States government, do they not? this definition of state fits the state of Israeli and its connection to the United States of America. Is not that true?
No, I mean, I find that very difficult to argue with because we're talking about the reality of the situation. As I've been saying for the last couple of years, that's why I called my book about the Zionist power in America the New Jerusalem, because although the Jewish state exists in a certain boundary, the power rests elsewhere, far beyond that little boundary of that little state. Mark Glenn, thanks for coming on tonight. We'll just continue this discussion next week because I know that this coming Monday, because I know there's a lot of people out there who would like to comment on this. So we'll see you then. Gene, thanks for your call. Folks, thanks for listening in this week. I'm going to go soak my poor tired feet in a nice hot bath. Have a good weekend, ladies and gentlemen. In the meantime, stay tuned here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. See what Rick Adams has to say, and Frank Whelan later tonight. Have a good weekend, folks.